Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Welcome to The Old Man and the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 83, PJ Tucker and our good friend Shay Serrano. Tommy, we have an amazing conversation with PJ. We have an amazing conversation with Shay about his new book. We're going to do a draft with him. We should address one thing real quick. This seems obvious, but I announced that I will be joining ESPN as an NBA analyst for this coming season. Excited about this. It's going to be amazing. I'll be doing mostly studio work. I'm hoping to do some games as well. We're going to try to fit me in where they can. This is in no way going to interfere with the pod.
Really good Twitter reaction from this. Every once in a while, you drop one of these tweets and it'll just blow up. And people were coming out of the woodwork yesterday. People that didn't even know, like, they've never talked about you publicly or anything like that. And they were like, oh my God, so excited for you, which is cool.
It meant a lot to me. It was similar to the retirement announcement. The outpouring of support, congratulations, love, all that stuff, well wishes. It's pretty cool, man.
It's better than when you announce something and nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be starting next week and I'll try as best we can when I know my schedule for ESPN. I will try on this pod to alert our listeners and our viewers about when I will be on ESPN and what I will be doing. But I'm really excited about this. It's going to be awesome. You guys are still going to get probably, arguably, the best player-to-player interviews in basketball on this pod.
Yeah.
That is not going to change. And it does not change with this PJ Tucker episode. PJ, by the way, this is his first time doing a podcast. He left it all on the table.
He left it all on the table. Well, I will say this, and we've talked about this. We've said it on the show before, but we've talked about it amongst ourselves, you know, going back since we started. Us being able to do these in person takes it to another level because PJ, he was just comfortable. We were hanging and we were, you know, and that's how you really get these stories out. And so it's really exciting, I think, for us as the season goes forward to be able to do more and more of this, is that, you know, the COVID protocols are starting to be lifted a bit and things like that.
Absolutely. It also helps that I brought a bottle of 1996 Grand Cru Red Burgundy from Romani Saint Vivant.
He was on one.
Yeah.
We all were.
That helps. We are also going to be joined at the end of this episode by our good friend of the pod, Shay Serrano. Shay is a 3-time New York Times best-selling author. His new book was released this week, Hip Hop and Other Things. And I'm sure, like all his other books, it'll be wildly entertaining, informative, thought-provoking, and all that stuff. Excited for the draft we have with him. It's pretty open-ended. I think we should get to our conversation with my guy, PJ Tucker. Let's get it. PJ, thank you so much for being with us. We're adhering to some apparently some safety protocols, so we're across the room from each other. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast, man.
No doubt about it, man. My first podcast. I'm happy to be here.
And I know we talk on Instagram. I follow your page, so I know you're a Red Burgundy guy. So I brought you a nice bottle of Red Burgundy in honor of you being here. Really appreciate it. We should start with the lifestyle stuff. Because I think more than maybe any player we've had on the pod, you're as known as much for your swag as you are for your game. And there's a number of things, cars, fashion, shoes, of course, wine. Have you always been this way with collectibles?
Yeah, no. Because I've always, like, that was like the initial, like why? Like hooping, like, you know what I'm saying? It was like my way out, take care of my family, but I like nice stuff. I'm hooping because I like nice stuff. I'm working really hard because I want to buy everything.
Yeah. Did you have a first purchase, like a crazy first purchase that you look back on now still?
I didn't, because of my entry into it. Like, I wasn't like, you know, I wasn't first round. Like, me and JJ same class, so.
Yeah.
I went second round, so it was like, you know, really humble beginning. Like I had to grind through it to get it, you know what I'm saying? So that was even more so the reason, like, it was like.
Once you got it.
An adult. Like, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't like a young guy get in and just do some crazy stuff.
Tommy, I'm actually glad you asked that question, and I was hoping this would come up organically. I'm going to bring it up. So, end of our rookie year in the NBA. Yeah. I'm back in North Carolina. I land at RDU. I'm in the Southwest. I think it was in the Southwest terminal. Yep. Baggage claim. I'm waiting on my sister to come pick me up. And PJ, who again, we're rookies, rolls up in a red Bentley with red rims. So I can say PJ has been like this from day one.
Hey, Jay, I'm not going to lie. I knew you were going to tell this story when I got here. I'm like, he is 1,000% telling this story. His face when he see me, like he was like, he was just like okay. Like, yeah. It's just like, okay.
It was right. Impressive. Right, it was impressive.
Yep.
I was reading some earlier today. Basically, you have shoes in storage in like 7 or 8 different cities. Mm-hmm. You've moved around a little bit over the last, you know, 10 years, let's call it, for sure, of your career. Yep. Phoenix, Houston, Milwaukee, Miami, Toronto. You're from Raleigh. How do you sort of logistically navigate all of your collectibles? And wine, too, because we were just talking.
Yeah. No, wine storage. The shoes aren't bad. Like, the shoes are easy. It's the wine. Because you get, you know, you get traded or something. More times than not, if it's not, you know, obviously the trade deadline is normally in the summertime when you're switched and moving wine in dead summer in Texas or North Carolina is not a good thing. Especially in the old one. Like, really, like, yeah, I mean, it's going to burn up. It's going to burn up.
But with all of the sneakers, that isn't a challenge at all? In terms of
it is, but it isn't, right? So I built this huge shoe kind of thing in my house in North Carolina. So that's when the first place I built my house in North Carolina, I built this out. Now, I even posted it, I think, a bunch of, like, in the beginning, sent it up. And then moving our stuff from Phoenix into that house, a lot of my stuff went there, but all of it didn't. So I left shoes in a storage in Phoenix. So, and that's how it kind of started from there. And then everywhere else I went after that, went to Houston, I ended up buying a shoe house. Now this, I have a house that just stores all of my shoes, where I would say 70% of my shoes are in there. they're all stored in there, but I still got storage there in Phoenix, still North Carolina, where the house was. Like, so it just gets tough trying to find certain stuff, but more times than not, my assistant, he'd go to a city, go through the storage, find
it. I have a question about the logistics of the Houston Shoe House. So, yeah. Like, is there someone who's operating it all the time? Like,
Yeah. My assistant, he's always there.
So he's temperature, just like, temperature controlled like a wine
cellar?
Yeah,
seller. No, it's just on temperature control, for sure.
So this
no
is just doubt. Like a museum. I mean, like, for like, there's a lot of sneakerheads that definitely like listen to the show or watch the show or whatever. Like, right. If they walked in there,
it's just grails. A lot of grails.
It's just shoes everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it's
do you
a shoe house.
Do you catalog everything?
No.
No.
I know everything
but
is.
But you know every shoe you
I
have.
I know every shoe. I know everything is. I have an idea where everything is for the most part, but always we getting, like, I do this every day, right? Like, every day is something with shoes going to happen with me. Like, I'm going to buy somebody's collection. We're going to do something. It's like somebody emailed us. Somebody did something. So we'll, every morning, something with shoes every day.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
amazing.
Crazy.
I'm glad you got to this point, and I want to go back to the end of your rookie year, the end of our rookie year. And I don't know the story, actually, of how you played in Toronto your rookie year and how you sort of ended up overseas. And you, I think I wrote it down, but I think you played in like five different countries.
Yes. Yeah. Five. It was like 5 and 4 years.
Yeah.
It was so crazy, right? Because I don't think I've ever even told a story. I don't think so. I don't think I've ever told a story. But my rookie year was so tough. I had a really tough, and you know how it is, JJ. Like, if you go to like, I don't know, like Draymond Green went to the perfect situation, right? It was like he fit in. It's like perfect. Or you can go to situations where you just don't fit, right? Like, I went to a situation where we had a bunch of wings, threes, fours. Like, we had a bunch of wings. It just was a lot of guys, and they were all vets. It was some guys trying to find their way, but everybody had played. And so me coming in that mix, it just – nobody was helping me, right? It was like I was like competition. So, and I didn't play. And that was tough for me, like not getting a chance to really play because, you know, come from college, you're all American, all these things. You go to NBA and you're thinking, all right, now I'm about to do it here. And you don't. I did not react to that well. I didn't. I was terrible. I was really bad. Like, I would show right before practice. I was just doing whatever I wanted. Like, I was like, I'm not playing. I don't care. You know, not knowing that they'll cut you. Like, they'll let you go. You know, like, and it's funny now because I try to help so many young guys now that when I see them acting like me or doing stuff, I'll be like all over them. Like, nah, like not letting me go down that path. So, but I got to the end of that year and I got called in for a meeting. I was in the G League. I came back. They sent me down, I came back. It was like April, right before the playoffs. Playoffs about to start. And Sam Mitchell just won Coach of the Year. We're doing pretty good. And they called me in for a meeting. And I walk up, and everybody's sitting in there. I mean, the GM, the president, they're all, Colangelo, they're all sitting in there. It's like, what's up? Like, coach in there. They got, like, the TV, right? And they, like, show before the game, during the game and after the game, just showing me on the bench. Pre-game, they like had it, they taped it all. It was terrible. To this day, it makes me sick to my stomach thinking about it.
Because of the way you were portrayed or because they actually did that? Because you wish you could have been better.
Oh, no, yeah, nothing about them. They should have. That is the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Wow. Because it was like, I couldn't. That's why, and that was probably why I ain't told the story, because I couldn't tell my mom that. I couldn't. Come on. Like, I'm an adult. Nobody can judge me harder than I judge myself. And that was the first time I, like, seen myself in that light, and I was like, okay.
Did you realize it at the time, or did it?
No, of course not.
So it was like
you weren't being intentional about it. You weren't intentionally trying to be an asshole.
I really wasn't, but it's just, if nobody helps you, if I didn't have vets on the team, guys on there like grabbing me, like you know how we do younger guys now. If I would have had somebody, maybe I wouldn't have. But I didn't know because nobody told me. No guys, nobody. You know, it just wasn't like that.
Did they cut you right after the season?
They cut me before the playoffs, like right going into the playoffs.
Basically,
like last week of the season.
After that meeting,
yeah,
sometime after,
like right after that.
And so, did you wait around to see if any deals would come up, or did you immediately just to say, I'm going to go overseas and play?
I immediately wanted to go overseas. right away. Like, I got some camp advice. Like, we started talk. I was like, I'm out. I got an offer. I was out.
And that was because you wanted to play. I just want to hoop.
I want to play.
Yeah.
I want to play.
So I was gonna ask about this. You killed overseas. You know, you won, I think, two league finals MVP, two league championships, one in Israel, one in Germany.
Yep.
Sort of the second time around, besides that part of it, and I was hoping you sort of touched on that, because it is a mindset shift you have to make when you don't succeed early on in your career. Do you think there was anything else with the way the league was changing that helped you have more success the second time around? Because when we were drafted, you were sort of positionless.
1,000%.
And in the last 10 years, it's like, that's a strength now.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas in 06, that was a weakness.
I talk about that all the time. And that term, man, that tweener, like, that was the term, right? Like, they didn't know. When we got drafted, it was like, yeah, you can play, but we don't really know what you are. So just kind of figure it out. Like, I don't, like, they didn't, they really, because all four men were like, KG, like, back to the basket, face up. They could shoot, but it was like 6'11", you know, that prototypical four man. Tim Duncan, it was like that. Like, everybody. We had Bargnani with me my rookie year. And all the three men were like, you know, like T-Mac, like, you know, Vince Carter. It was like those type of guys, athletic, long. Like, so when you kind of just were in the middle, you really were. Like, it was tweener. So you just didn't fit, and nobody really understood it. And the second go at it is weird because at the time, I still didn't know. I was still trying to figure it out. I came back. When I signed with the Suns, I was pissed because I just got my biggest deal, a multi-year deal in Europe. I was going to Russia. My wife and my agent talked me into staying, and I was really mad actually going into Phoenix, which was stupid. No, I'm sorry, obviously. But even then, coming back, I still didn't know, right? Like, I didn't know. I was a much better player. I was smarter. I knew how to be a pro. I knew how to play. But I still didn't know where they were going to play me. But I was prepared to be anywhere, right? Like, I played center sometimes. I played power forward. I played point guard. I played everything over there. So it was that kind of knowledge of knowing how to play and what to do that I think helped me even through the years, like especially those early years on, being able to just kind of fill spots. Somebody's down, oh, I can play that spot. You know, I can, I know all the plays from every position.
But so, like you said, you were pissed before you got to Phoenix. Like, was there, when you were overseas, did you have that like burning desire, like, I got to get back into the league to prove myself? Or was like, I'm good, I'll stay here.
That was my one thing. I would have like teammates, like when you're over there, there's like guys always, like especially Americans, they like watch their computers and watch games, watch NBA games. I couldn't do it. I couldn't watch NBA games. I never watched NBA games. I couldn't do it.
So you were completely focused on where you were and what you were doing. There was no, NBA was out of sight, out of mind.
I was so heartbroken that I couldn't watch NBA games. I see JJ, I see everybody, all the guys that was in my class. Like, it was like, I was like I let myself down.
Yeah.
But I think that's what like pushed me over there to be so good too, and really lock in to where I was at and lock in to give those guys everything I had, because I let myself down here. You know what I'm saying? So it was kind of the.
Did you have any moments over there? Like, Euro basketball is just different. Everything about it is different.
Yes.
Did you have any moments where you were like, all right, like, this is different than the NBA, this is different than college, like, I'm almost in a different world?
Yeah, right when you get there, you know that. They're gonna call walk on you so much, any American first gets there, they're gonna call walk on you every time. If you catch the ball and like jab and try to make a move, they're gonna call walk. Yeah, I learned to put the ball down. Like, it's a different game. It is, right away, it's a different game. And it's so deep, I went places I never imagined I would be like playing basketball. It was like, I had moments. Like, I retired like four times. I was on a bus ride in Ukraine. I called my agent. I got, put my, this is back in the day. I turned on my roaming on my phone. You have to turn on roaming. Back then, you turn it on. Got a signal, and I called my agent. I was like, I'm done. I'm not playing anymore. I'm on a bus ride right now in Western Ukraine. and it's daytime, but it's dark and I can't see anything and I want to come home and I'm done.
I'm sorry for laughing. I really am.
It's crazy.
I'm not laughing because it's necessarily funny, but I'm laughing more because of where you are right now.
It's crazy.
It's fucking crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
I tell these stories and people are like, man, I'm like, no, listen, bro, you have no idea. I played a game in Siberia and it was like 3 feet of ice everywhere outside and there was a game in the middle. I have no idea where I was at in Siberia.
Wow. Speaking, going back to my original question about sort of positionless basketball and why that's been such a strength for you the last 10 years, I was thinking about it in the bubble. You were starting for Houston at the five.
Yes.
And then a year later, you're starting in the NBA Finals at the three.
Yeah.
And you can just sort of shift in wherever. You can guard twos, you can guard fives. And it's a beautiful thing. And I'm wondering, too, about that transition from your rookie year when you weren't playing, maybe being a little hard-headed, to when you came back and your development then as an NBA player and embracing a role. It's a common theme we sort of bring up on the show when we talk to certain guys because it's a really hard thing to do. There are games, and I looked at game 6 box score. You played 36 minutes. You had the highest plus-minus on the team. You took one shot. So there's something that you have to give up in order to reach sort of a maximum value, which seems like a paradox, but it's true.
It's the number one thing I talk about. Without a doubt, it is. People will never understand. And I'm so glad you brought this up. Like, I was telling one of our young guys the other day, because he asked me, he's like, yo, you just played 38 minutes, you shot the ball twice. I said, go back, look in the finals. Game 6, the game-winning game. I didn't score a basket. I shot the ball one time. I played 40 minutes. 40 minutes. Do you know how hard it is to play as hard as I play and to play defense every possession and run after every 50-50 ball and be the most communicative, talking person and not do anything that everybody – what not do anything that's going to show up on anybody's highlight film. Like, not make – like, it's – the hardest thing in the world. And the funny thing is, I never feel it. It's weird. I never feel it because I'm trying to do so much to help everybody else be the best player they can be and to help our team be the best team that we can be, that even in those moments where you be like, I know a lot of guys are like, oh man, in the second quarter, I ain't touched the ball, I ain't shot, I ain't got no rhythm. It's like that taking that second to think that is you're not prepared. You're not ready. Cause now it's how play's gonna happen and you're not gonna be there because you're thinking about something else. So it's like tricking yourself to lock in every moment and not worry about things like that because
I actually let's pretend in an alternate universe that I was not 6'4 with a 6'3 wingspan. And I was 6'6 with a 6'8 wingspan.
Oh,
and I had
God.
To play your role. No, but I had to play your role.
And you can shoot like you.
Yeah, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I can't do the stand there. I've got to move. I get antsy. The waiting for the swing pass in the corner on offense, I will go nuts. I will go fucking nuts. And I think salary aside, and for your peers, of course, you're widely respected across the NBA. But in some ways, what you do is a thankless job. Do you ever feel that way?
Oh, for sure. Nobody cares, Jason. You know it. Like, it'll be like, oh, no, you're great, like, whatever. And, like, it is a thankless job. Like, you got to get used to nobody really caring. Like,
is it ever – do you ever feel – because I was going to bring up Game 7 against Kevin in the Nets series. And I was sitting right behind his mom and Rich Kleiman and watching the game up close. I mean, you were in his shit the whole game. He was hitting ridiculous shots. And I'm thinking to myself, like, PJ's done this now for 6 nights. He did it in the first series. He's going to do it in the next series. He did it in the finals. And you're going against, you're guarding literally the best offensive players in the world. And that night, I just thought to myself, PJ Tucker could not have played better defense tonight. And Kevin had what he ended up with 47 or 48.
Yeah, 50 points.
Yeah, called it 50 ball. Okay, 50 ball. At times, does it feel like an exercise in futility? Like there's nothing you can do against the best players in the world?
No, because if I felt like that, then I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Do you get discouraged, I guess, is a better question.
No. Because it's like, okay, man, that was incredible. You made that. Now do it again. Because I'm not going to stop. And that was the confrontation. But we do that, dude. Me and him, like, ever since I've known him, we've done that forever. Like, I kept telling him, we're talking shit, you know, it's like, whatever. But I'm like, he's like, stop hacking me. I'm like, I'm not going to stop. Like, as like we got face to face. I'm not going anywhere. Like, it's that tricking myself because he's killing me. Like, he's got 50. He's going to score 50. I'm telling my teammates, he's going to score 50. Y'all guard y'all, man. He's going to score. But how many shots is going to take him? How hard is he going to? I'm going to make him work harder than anybody. I'm going to work him because he's going to score. Like, and then I'm telling you, you have to trick yourself. Like,
we asked Drew this when Drew came on after you guys won the finals. Did you think the shot was a three? The shot to tie at the end of regulation?
I'm not going to lie, man. When he turned, I just kind of, and you can see my face. I'm like, oh my God. Because I, like, to close that distance with him, it's like, because he's so, like, it's, like, you know, he's so long. He's so tall. Like, you, if I can't get in his body and I can't really affect him, then he's like, it's nothing else to do. And he got that space. It was a great move. And I didn't have time to look at his feet. I really didn't. I'm trying so hard to get there to try to give any kind of contest I can. And so I didn't know. All I know is when I turned and looked, I knew it was like, it was in. I knew it. I seen it. It was crazy.
I read a story about when you were at Texas and he came to visit.
Oh my God.
And he came with you. So you knew then that he was going to be like,
listen,
this.
Listen, man, I knew then. I knew he's a junior high school that he's the best player in the world.
Really?
And I'm not just saying that, like, it's not like,
yeah,
like Kobe's my favorite, like, whatever. Like, guys,
maybe not at the time, but you knew.
Yeah,
at
it's
some
like
point,
he's
going to
be like,
there.
Yeah, he's like one of those guys. Like, he's one of those guys right now. Like, that day, I was like, why is he coming here? He has no business stepping foot on this campus. Like, he really, a junior high school, mind you, Texas and Duke were 1-2 that year, like preseason.
It's gonna come up later.
Yeah.
There's no way this isn't
not
gonna.
Oh, we're not gonna leave this out of the
way. Get out of the way now.
Oh,
no. It'll come up later.
Known.
Don't worry.
Don't worry. We're like high as ever. Like we're like one of two best teams in the country. This kid's coming in. It's like whatever, dog. I mean, he just everything he does right now, he was doing it. He's passing half, and like I remember LaMarcus like standing like feet on the three-point line. He just like Pezzy pulled up. It was so much. It was like I was literally looking at it like, what? Hold on. Driving by guys, dunking. Like it was crazy. It was like a video game. Like seriously, nobody could guard him.
I had a similar experience. It was right after his rookie year. And he had a good rookie year. I think he won rookie of the year. But he had like, it was inefficient. I think he shot around 40%. It was not the Kevin Durant we know today. He was figuring things out as a rookie. But I was with the USA basketball team, the national team that summer, mm-hmm. as they were all doing training camp and got to play with them for a couple weeks. And at the end of that camp, they were like, Kevin, you're not going to be on the team. But you knew then after those 2 weeks that he was going to be, like he's going to be a top five player within the next 2 or 3 years. You could see it then.
Right.
Serious question. There's a video on Instagram. Your back is turned in Game 7. So you can't really tell what you are saying to Wanda, to his mother. And then she says back, I love you too. Did you say I love you or did you just blow a kiss? Because from my vantage point on the sideline, all I saw was you blowing a kiss.
So I was talking crazy. And she was like, I was in him. I had got him a few times, like real, like some tough hits. And she was like, you're not, he's not playing basketball. He's playing football. He out there tackling him, blah, blah. She's going at me. She's going at me. Somebody's shooting a free throw. She's going at me. And I hear. I stand there. And I turn around. And I said, I love you, Mom. And she, I mean, right in stride, she says, I love you too. Like, it was, and I can't believe, like, TNT caught it. Like, they really it caught it. It was perfect. It was crazy how they caught it and the timing of it. But it was, that was for sure my moment of the playoffs. That was.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. We should talk a little bit about the Bucks run. Before we get to that, though, right after I got traded to Dallas, I was in the hotel room, and I ran into you in the hallway. You had just been traded to Milwaukee. And we can cut this in. I don't care.
Me and Jason are just meeting the craziest places, but look, man.
I know. And we start chatting or whatever. I think I was coming back from my COVID testing.
Yep.
Because I had to test with you guys. Yep. That night,
and I was on my way
down.
Just
got into town.
Yep.
And you were testing with you know, the Bucks or whatever, and ran into each other. We chatted for like 10 minutes, and you said to me, I really thought I was getting traded to Miami. That's what you said.
I told you that.
And I probably said, I really didn't expect I was getting traded to Dallas or something, or something like that. And it's crazy how it works out. You end up getting traded to Milwaukee. You win a championship. And we can talk about the exit from Milwaukee if you want, but you end up going to Miami.
Then I end up in Miami.
It's wild.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Which it was this, those, it was those two, right? So, but the way things were looking, it was, I thought Miami was going to be like, it was all the signs were, all the telltale signs were saying Miami at the time.
This is back in March.
This is like in March.
Yeah.
And then the Milwaukee thing just happened. Like, it was like, boom. It just happened. And I was like, wait, what happened? Whoa, wait. It was literally like, it, I didn't think so. They called, had a conversation, done.
When did you get a sense with that team in the playoffs that you're like, because you've been through this war a bunch of times.
Right.
So more than, you know, a lot of your teammates on that team. So like, when did you get a sense that, we actually, like, we might have it. Like, we might be able to take this somewhere.
All right, let's keep it real. Like, 2 weeks ago, every team in the NBA is talking about they got a shot. All right, listen, it's like six teams that really got a chance to win a championship, right? Let's cut the BS. Like, everybody talks about it. It's six teams that really got a chance, right? You go through the season and you have highs and lows, but you'll get a good feel of your team and where you kind of stack up. And, you know, if you can really match up and be able to go at it with some of the best teams, and if you are one of those best teams, we felt like we were a really good team. But when I got there, obviously most of those guys have been there. Me and Drew just getting there. Then I'm coming. It's like figuring it out. Honestly, because Dante wasn't hurt yet. So it was like, it wasn't enough minutes for everybody at first. Because we had a lot of guys. Like we really did. We were deep. We had a really deep team. And so they were still trying to figure it all out. You know, so every night somebody wasn't happy. It was just, you know, whatever. You dropped a few games, won some games, but you still don't know, right? And you start the playoffs and you go through the rounds. And for better or worse, like the confidence you gain and lose through series, the Brooklyn series, I'm not going to lie, that was hands down the hardest thing I've ever done. Physically, mentally, like that was a really – I don't think I'll ever. That was like, you know, hopefully,
the,
if I
the
get
ups
this
and downs
year,
of that series were crazy.
It's the most craziest thing ever. You know, all the drama, all the talking, all the. It was just so much. And to win that series and still have two more series to play to win the NBA championship, I'm not gonna lie. After Game 7, I was like, wait, we still gotta play some more.
Like, I thought that was the championship.
Done. Like, it felt that way. So when you still, and then, I mean, two totally different series from that and from each other with Atlanta and Phoenix, but it was still the same. Like, it was just, I'm trying to explain it because you can't, it's hard, man. When you go through it and the emotion that goes through it, like, you can't, it's hard to, like, duplicate it and express like that feeling of it, because the ups and downs, the emotional ups and downs of it, it's like the craziest relationship you've ever been in your life or something. Like, I don't know. It's crazy.
Unfortunately, I can't understand the feeling you had when you had a championship. But there's a very specific series in my career that was like that series. And that was the first round in 15 when the Clippers played the Spurs.
Yes.
We went that seven.
That was crazy.
We literally, both teams threw haymakers. And the ups and downs, the emotional. We had multiple elimination games. We had to win game six on the road, yep, in San Antonio.
I watched every game that series.
And I hit a couple shots late, and then Chris hit the game winner.
Yep.
Kawhi's got like a tip in, and Matt Barnes deflects the ball. We win, and like I'm on the court, and it's the first round. And I'm like, whoa, are tears coming? Are tears coming? Because it was so emotional. That series was so crazy. Emotionally draining. And then I'm walking off the court, and Arn Tellem, who's now with the Pistons, but was my agent for the first 10 or 11 years of my career, he comes over and he gives me a hug. I'm so fucking proud of you. And like, I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to cry. Get back. I got to get to the locker room. And it's inexplainable, but Brooklyn, was good enough to win a championship. No. That year, San Antonio was good enough to win a championship. We were good enough to win a championship. And so when you beat a team in seven games in an up and down series like that, the emotions are just, it's exhausting at the end.
It's exhausting.
You're done.
It is, man. It is. And people don't understand that. Like, you watch it. That's one thing, man. When you're playing and you down 0-2, and then you go on the road and you rally, and then you go back home and lose, and then you got to go on back on the road. It's like the day after day after day, your family, everybody talking, media, Sports Center, everybody.
The overreactions, like, just so much. The overreactions in your case after game one of that series against Brooklyn. You have to deal with that. You guys get
and
blown
game,
out.
And yeah. Game five. And
game five.
Game five was the one where it was like, okay. It's like, all right.
Was there a part of going back to the Houston experience? Like I was talking before about how like you just had a little more experience dealing with this than like the rest of your teammates, where obviously you didn't come out on top in those series, but those series were also very similar.
For sure.
In that those swings were happening in those Warriors
games. Crazy.
So like how do you stay measured? How do you basically not, obviously you're not gonna care about the TV and everything like that, but how do you not like emotionally, you know, kind of get down when you have like a game five like this where you blow a big lead and all of a sudden your back's against the wall?
I'm telling you, you gotta, for me, it's like I trick myself, man, because I don't watch any of the TV. Like, I don't hear anybody talking. My people around me know I don't want to talk about it. It's like you gotta trick yourself to this weird, you gotta put yourself in this weird place where you're just like mentally, like, you know, 0-0. Give everything you got. Do everything you can do. You know, play. Do everything you can do to help this team win. And whatever happens, happens. And that's what you got to just, in your heart, accept that and go out and try to do it. Because if you put that pressure on yourself to try to, like, oh, it's must win. We got it. Like, it's you're going to go 0-for and you're going to be terrible. You're not going to guard anybody. And you're going to be bad probably. So you got to play.
I was thinking about your Houston teams versus those Warrior teams, and then I was thinking about that Bucks Net series specifically.
Night
after
day.
You guys won, did you have any thoughts of the amount of luck that is involved?
Yes.
In winning a championship,
no doubt about it.
You know, you're up 3-2 against Houston that first year with CP, your first year in Houston too, and a minute 30 to go, whatever it was, CP blows his hamstring out. You're even up, I think, big in game six and game seven in the first half.
Double digits.
Yeah. And lose those games. James gets hurt in that series for Brooklyn. Kyrie gets hurt in that series for Brooklyn. You guys end up winning a championship. Not to discredit anyone's championship by any means.
No doubt. No doubt.
But there's always a little bit of luck or unluckiness involved.
It's me winning this year made me finally let go of everything I held in from Houston. Though because when you lose like that, you can't control it. Like it's gonna be in your heart. Like that, like there's nothing there's nothing nobody can tell me that we, if Chris doesn't get hurt, that we don't win, right? Like, you don't, like, of course, they won and you know, whatever. What happened, happened. But in my heart, for years, like, it's like, Chris don't go down, we win. Chris don't go down, we win. He was playing insane. He was lights out. He's lights out. And it's one of those things. And then winning, everything Brooklyn, like watching Brooklyn go through that, right? And then on the flip, we go the Atlanta series and Giannis goes out. And it was like that to me again, right? Like I was like, oh man. Like, nah, this ain't happening again. Like, nah, come on. Not like the same thing, like Western Conference Finals. Like, I'm like, there's no way. And to see our team rally that game 5 and 6 was incredible. It was inspiring. It really was, because to watch Brooke just like kick the door down, like, oh, like I've been waiting for this. Like Brooke, it was almost like Brooke Lopez was like really like, okay, I'm ready. Like, don't worry, guys. Like Brooke went crazy. Nothing, like he didn't do anything that he don't normally do, but it right. was like, you know, it was just heavy dose of Brooke, and he
the
was
super
so good.
Size Nets version of
Brooke. Oh man, yeah. Bro, Brooke was it was the old Nets Brooke. Yeah. Like where he was like unstoppable. Like nobody could guard him. He's just it was amazing. But I feel like I had to go through that to get to that, if that makes sense. That for makes me sense. In my journey, yeah. I feel like the experience and everything.
If you've been following the pod, you know I'm stepping my suit game up as I'm calling more and more games. So shout out Indochino for getting me all prepared for this home stretch of games. It's also wedding season, so you can get in on looking great. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into the wedding season looking like $1 million, even though the suits start at just $499. You can either book an appointment at one of their showrooms or do what I did and set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. I just ordered a nice plum suit with pinstripes. I'm trying to tap into my inner Walt Frazier, and I think it's working. The entire process was super simple, and the suit fits great. That's the sweet spot. So look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code OLDMAN to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code OLDMAN.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
We touched on the ups and downs of the playoffs for you guys with Drew. You know, the Atlanta series being down, of course, the Brooklyn series being down, losing first two games against Phoenix before winning 4 in a row. You went through that emotional roller coaster in the semis. What's that release for you after game 6? What's going through your mind? Like, there's got to be a level of just a weight off your shoulder that I'm assuming it's just impossible to describe.
It's so crazy, man, because it took everybody, and like that feeling of like that unity of that group, right? We hadn't been together long. You know, Drew just got there. I just got like, it was like when you come together at a time and the focus and how locked in everybody was every night from being down twice in 2 series and, you know, people counting you out. Everybody saying we can't do it. There's no way. Being down in the finals, 0-2, like that, like to see guys lock in game 3 and 4 and then go to Phoenix and like that was 4 in a row. Like nobody thought that. Like it. So you go through all those moments like in like 5 seconds, right? In your head, it's like a crazy fast forward, and it's just like that. I mean, because I got the last rebound, right? And I'm dribbling it out, and it was just like everything you've been through in your basketball career just like falling off. It was like everything just falling off your shoulders. That's what it felt like.
Wow. Did you do, like we were talking about earlier, did you do like any immediate like introspection about like thinking about when you were in Siberia or like when you were in all of these crazy, because your journey, even with all of your other teammates, I mean, Giannis has obviously had a crazy route right. to get there and everything like that, but your basketball journey was definitely different than everybody else right. that had a ring. And so when you're like in the locker room afterwards, you're like, I cannot believe that I'm in this moment.
I haven't got to that point yet, right? Because I don't. To me, it's like when I get there, then it's like I'm done. Like I don't want to think about that till I'm done. Like I'm still in the journey. I'm still fighting. I'm still going through it. And I always said once I got done, then I'll kind of, you know, get to that. But I did. I said I'm not supposed to be here, right? It's like that. They said I wasn't. I couldn't and I shouldn't and all that stuff. And it's like the guys, it's not for me, it's for guys that are coming behind me, right? Like all the 6'5", 6'6", guys that, you know, player of the year at college, doing all this stuff, really good college players, but just don't translate to being pros. And now these guys being guys that pros, that all the professional scouts are looking for because they can handle the ball. They can pass. They can do multiple things. They're not the size, but they can guard guys that size. And like, and they got the heart. You know, it's like all the intangibles. Like,
you're one of the blueprints for those guys now,
right? You know, and I take pride in that. Like, that's a big deal for me because I know what it felt like them saying that I wasn't supposed to be here.
How drunk were you at the championship parade? Scale of 1 to 10.
Listen. JJ, listen, I'm gonna tell you right now. I went like, I don't think I slept for like 5 days straight. You've been to Milwaukee, obviously. Have you ever been to Milwaukee in the summer, like when it's nice out?
Nah.
Milwaukee's actually a nice place. And
I love Milwaukee.
Milwaukee is really nice, actually. In the summertime, it is delightful. And when the Bucks are winning, it's even better. And
that crowd was wild.
I couldn't pay for a drink for, I mean, like you, I mean, it's like the bar, like they got crazy bars and stuff. It's like a million of them. And you know me, I mean, I'm from North Carolina. Like I literally just like walked. I didn't get in the car. Like we just walked up the streets and just went. And I just enjoyed it with the fans because I knew how much it meant to them. Like it could never mean as much to me as it meant to them. Like they just, it was incredible. And by the time I got to the parade, you gotta think who I play with too. Like, all right, JJ, let's, all right. Like Giannis, Chris Middleton, no. Like Chris is like,
yeah.
Drew, no. Like it's like really. All really. These, like the best dudes you'll ever meet in your life, right? Mind you, like all these guys, amazing people, like the best people, best kind of people. And then there's me, like I'm the guy, right? I'm like, all right, okay. This is the parade, guys. Like, I've watched parades. Like, this is not what, we're not going out like this. We're not going out like this. JJ, we're not going out like this. So I'm already like still stuck from the night before. So it's like 10 in the morning. Ace of Spades sent me like, I don't know how many, like these huge like jillabons of freaking Ace of Spades. Like I had so much champagne, right? So I like packed all the buses with it. And we're having fun, we're spraying it at first. And I'm like, all right. Let's go. It's time to turn this up. And Chris Middleton's like, Tuck. He's like, Tuck, no, please. And I just went crazy.
When you gave your speech, was your buzz peaking? Was it waning? Was it steady?
I was just about to get there. I wasn't there yet. I was like right there. And so the screaming and yelling, like I was starting to lose my voice from the parade, from yelling the whole time. And so I was just right there, Jay, I'm not gonna lie. And then I just finished one and my boy hands me this another huge bottle. And this is like right before. So right when I get up there, I say my name. I'm like, oh, it's my turn. All right. I didn't say anything I thought I was gonna. I told myself I was gonna say because I was ending like that, but it ended up just being my whole speech. I forgot everything before. So that's when I knew I was drunk. And then the sip was not supposed to, it wasn't supposed to be that. I was gonna take a sip and then spray it, but you know,
it happens, man.
Yeah,
it happens just, to the best of us.
I mean, don't you wish the NBA had like a Stanley Cup? They could like allow like,
that would be
like let you take it to North Carolina.
Oh my God. They guys do that. They take goes on. I mean, Giannis like kept it for the entire summer. Nobody else really got a chance. He took it on a world tour. I think he took a picture of it everywhere. But guys get a chance to. Our summer, I think we had the shortest summer from the championship to like start of the season. So it wasn't a lot of time. But yeah, who cares? It was.
Speaking of Giannis, what was the most surprising thing becoming his teammate about him before you got there?
We've had some battles, like epic, like going at it, right? I've guarded him his whole career. So to see how actually hard he works on his free throws and even like his three, like he works really hard. Dog. And I'm like, he just can't shoot free throws. But he really works. Like I shot with him a ton. Like he really does. He really does. And that surprised me. When I first got there, I had no idea, you know, his work. You don't know guys' work ethic if you don't play with them. Like you never know. I imagine JJ gets threes up. I mean, I don't know how hard he works, but I'd imagine he gets a bunch of threes up. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know. You get there and you're like, I'm like, damn, he really works hard, dog. Like he really works hard.
I've heard that from a number of people. Let's talk a little bit about how you ended up at Texas and your high school recruitment. You grew up in Raleigh. There's three amazing schools and a bunch of other schools within driving distance.
I've known JJ for a long time, guys. This is
did none of the North Carolina schools really recruit you? Is that a true story?
That's not true. See, and everybody says like that always comes up. I'm like,
it's become fact now.
It is. Wake Forest. Me and Chris were supposed to go to school together. We said we were going to go to school together, right? We were like, yo, we're going to go to the same school. He committed to Wake Forest. Didn't ask me. Like he just did it. Like he was going to Wake Forest. He's like, come on. At the time, his junior year, my grades weren't ready to go to Wake Forest. But we were talking. They end up signing some other guys. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to go to Wake Forest anyways. I love Coach Prosser. Rest in peace. Love Coach Prosser was my guy. And then Carolina, right? Like Carolina, my AU team, we're affiliated with Carolina. That was my dream. My dream was to go to Carolina. I've never wanted to go anywhere else other than Carolina. So Matt Doherty was a coach then, which it just wasn't. And guys that were on Carolina back then, I mean, I've never said this, but I know they don't care. They were like, don't come here. Hey, Jay, have you ever like, mind you, these are my guys. Like, I hang with these guys. I know these guys. They're like, don't come here. Like, I know you want to come here. You dream. Like, don't come here.
I've heard some stories about those years. The transition years.
Yeah, the transition years, right?
Until like, Roy got there.
It was crazy. But being a kid growing up there, like it was my dream. Like Shamon Williams, Stack, these are my guys. Like they're like my brothers. So like it was like it hurt me not going to a North Carolina school. Like it really did. And that was like part of my like drive too, going to school. It was like it was only one scholarship that year, 03. They gave it to Rayshon Terry, who could play. Rayshon was a really good player. But it just, I was kind of heartbroken, really. I've never said that before to anybody, but I really was. And it was really a determining factor when Rick Barnes came. He was from North Carolina. It was like one of those things. Like, and all my guys, everybody's like, JJ is at Duke, Shavlik Randolph, he's like my high school rivalry. He went to Broughton right across from Raleigh, we went to middle school together. Like all these guys are going to all the schools, and I was like the one that had to leave. So it was like I felt some kind of way. Like I really did, and it was like all in me. But seeing Coach K all the time, like you know, he and Coach K would even say it, and like art, like they ask him about me. He's like, yeah, I love him, but yeah, like yeah, like no, nah. Like.
we should have recruited you.
I wasn't a Duke guy, which it was fine. Like it was cool. Like you know, whatever. But Clemson offered me; they were there, but that wasn't North. Like that wasn't Tobacco Road. You know, it was like whatever.
Did you? Maybe do you? Do you still carry that chip? Because like a little part of your chip on your shoulder is because of that. A little bit.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Right. It's like everything. Like you carry, I carry so, like, it's like, I didn't make the McDonald's game. I had a chip from that. I didn't do that. Like, I didn't go to Carolina. I had a chip from that. It's like, I got to school and it's like, you're not a pro. I had a chip from that. It's like you build those chips up. And that's what I was saying. Like, when you win an NBA championship, it's like all those chips fall off. They really do. Cause it's like, there's no, this is it. This is Mount Olympus. It's like, this is it. Like, I didn't like, I wasn't just like on the roster and like, I put blood, sweat, and tears into playing 38, 39, 40 minutes a game and winning something like this. Like, this is it.
So, a follow-up to that, I'm not trying to be like a psychiatrist, but those chips you're talking about,
yeah.
Some guys, and I think some guys have talked about this, they create these imaginary sort of snubs because they need that motivation,
yes.
Right? In your case, you're saying all that stuff fell off. So you were carrying around all that stuff, all of it, the whole time?
Every last one of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
Does it worry you now that you don't have them on you anymore?
Listen, man, I've never been so light in my life, JJ. Listen, I'm walking right here. I'm so light. No, seriously. And then, like, with the chips, right, it's like you got to go through, like, I had to go through like the levels of the league too at the same time, right? Like, it's like, all right, I got back. Okay, once you get back, you got to stick, right? What do I got to do to stick? So you figure out how to stick. I went from being in a rotation to being a starter, right? Now I'm in a starter. Now what do I got to do to continue to be a starter and to get paid, yeah. Right? And it's like level, like each, and those chips are still building because you're still going through shit as you're building yourself, right? Like, I got to be a better shooter. I got to defend better. I gotta, you know, every little thing. Like, you, it's, they just mount up.
Yeah. You brought up that 2005, 2006 Texas team.
We've talked about it one other time on this show. We talked about it with Kevin.
It doesn't really come up. It's not like.
We talked about it. Katie
really
brought it up.
Truthfully,
oh,
does
when he came on.
God. Oh, Kevin.
Kevin Katie, brought it up Katie when he came on the show.
This is single. All right, let me say this.
He said he was at that game.
This is single, like, hands down, the number one thing in my career through everything that I've got killed the most about. Number one. Oh, mind you, JJ had his best game of his college career that game. Like, JJ went absolutely. It was like almost like, I don't know. What was up with you? It was like you were mad at us or something. I don't know. JJ went crazy on us. He had like 46, 44.
I had 41.
Was he 41? Talking?
Well, we're going to get to that. Hold on. We're going to get to that. So there was remember Adam Morrison used to play like late at night. And I had watched his game either the night before or on Thursday night, but
that
at some point that week. And I was watching him shoot. And you know how he had the ball off to the side a little bit?
Yes.
But it was really high off to the side.
Yes.
And at the time, I was more straightforward. And I remember warm-ups that day, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna move my shooting pocket just ever so slightly aside. I'm not going to exaggerate it like Adam, but just ever so slightly. And I shot a few in warm-ups, and I was like, oh, fuck, this feels good. And then, like, the ball boy looked at me and he said, how many are you going to have tonight? And I said, for sure, 30 or 40. It feels that good right now.
Oh, my God.
And I actually missed my first two shots of that game. And I was undeterred because it felt so good. So at the end of the game, towards the end of the game, PJ didn't, like, he wasn't really guarding me for most of the game.
I didn't.
For some reason, towards the end of the game, it was already a blowout. He starts guarding me and he's doing the PJ stuff. You know, he's not letting me cut. He's cutting me off. He's shoving me. He's talking to me. I grabbed a rebound. He's tickling me and doing all this. I don't know, just all this weird shit. And it was apparent that he was trying to get under my skin. And obviously, he was frustrated. You know, I don't hold it against you to this day.
1,000%.
And I don't remember exactly how the story goes, but I got fouled. I had 39. We were up 30. And he's yapping at me at the free throw line. And like, as I'm shooting my free throw, I said something to him. I think what I said was, PJ, I've got 40 and you're down 30. Why the fuck are you talking? Something like that.
It was something to that degree. It was definitely. My friends destroyed me about this. And I'm not going to lie, for a year, I was so mad. Ken Paulino wanted to guard you. Like, KP, he wanted to guard you. And then I'm like, dude, all right, cool. Like, mind you, they got a bunch of other really good guys do, like, you couldn't just hone in on JJ because he's, I mean, Yeah, two of the best screeners. I mean, nobody screened like Sheldon. Like, Sheldon Williams would just kill people.
Elite screener.
Oh, God.
The only thing that bothered me that game, though, was that they put it this walk. I had like 33 in the second half, and at one point, we're taking the ball out underneath, and they make a substitution, and they put this guy, J.D. Carey.
Yeah, was that his name? J.D.
It was a walk-on, and they put him on me for one play. Yeah. And I scored, and I lit into your bench going back down the court.
Oh, man. I was so mad. You were crazy on the bench. Oh, you were crazy on the bench.
I can't believe you put a white guy on me.
You retired our black uniforms. Huh? You know about that?
Yeah, I do.
We were
because I'm close with Toddy, with Todd Wright. Yeah,
So he, there you go. All right, yeah, Toddy's Toddy's the one.
He's the best.
Toddy's like, get those fucking uniforms out of here. We were so high. Like, they told us we got these new black Nike Elite, we see him, we're like, oh my God, we're going crazy. What shoes are going to wear with him? And warm up. So like, oh, we ran him against Duke, man. Like, we were so hyped. And they blitzed us, man. I did not see that uniform ever again. They got rid of him.
Did you guys run into each other in between this and the Bentley? Did you see each other at all?
Oh, in the NBA. Yeah. I saw them at the Sweet 16 because we were in the same bracket. So we would have played in the Elite Eight. We lost to LSU. Then they lost to LSU in the Elite Eight game.
Yep.
So I saw him, and then I saw him in the NBA.
Yo, I see Jay.
But like, it was like, the thing about PJ, I've always had respect for PJ.
Yeah, we've always played
against each other in college too. Yep. Before that, my sophomore year.
Yep.
So yeah, it's always been respect, man. It's, yep. You know.
Yo, you know what's, I just thought about it when you, I didn't finish that, the Carolina thing. It's crazy because I go to Texas, you know, and I'm playing pretty good at the beginning. We get to the NCAA tournament, and second round, I see it. They do the brackets, I see it. We got Carolina, Sweet 16, in Denver.
Well, this is 04? 04.
We got Carolina. This is the year before they won it.
Yeah.
Raymond, Kansas, everybody, the whole team. And I had like 14 and 12. We beat Carolina. That was the first game I ever cried. Like, I cried, like, real. Like, I was so emotional. It was crazy. And that's why I knew, like, it bothered me. Like, I really was mad I didn't go to Carolina. But beating them in Denver, Roy's first year. And I will never forget, I was last in the, you know, shaking hands. And I got to Roy, and Roy grabs me. And he pulls me close and he goes, if I were here, you'd be here right now. And that, like, it was like, all right, I'm good. Like, it was like I don't know why Roy, and I love Roy. Roy's my, like, one of my favorite people. Roy Williams is awesome. But it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
The emotions of the show.
It's crazy.
The emotions of the show, Tommy.
I wanted to ask you about your current situation. Just sort of like your initial thoughts, but then also, like, we were talking about this before we started taping. Like, this team we obviously, you know, love a bunch of guys in this team and everything like that. It's a lot of guys with the chip on their shoulder you were talking about. It's a lot of guys that are kind of like mean motherfuckers who you kind of don't want to run into in a big game because they've been there before and they'll punch you in the mouth. Was that a part of the reason why you ended up here?
No doubt about it. This year, like me and Jay, like you said, we were talking before, and being free and being like my 16th year, I got to have some kind of purpose, and I got to want to be out there, right? Like, I can't just play basketball anymore. In this situation, like, handpicking it, like, this was like, okay, I like that. Like, I like me and that, like, that, just that whole makeup. It's like, yeah, I like that, you know? And it's not just that, right? It's not just like, because there's a lot of chippy guys and the tough, like, it's like smart chippy guy. Like, it's guys that got a chip on the shoulder, but they play really hard. I know we're gonna play hard. No matter if we win, lose, or draw, we're gonna give everything we got every night. I know that 1,000%. I've been on teams where I couldn't say that, right? Like, I played with guys, it's not like that. And that's all I ask. Like, if we going out there and we just together, you know, we going and we mobbing and we together and we playing together. It's our style of play too, right? Like, the way we move the ball is crazy. Kyle's throwing like full court passes to Jimmy, and Jimmy's like turning down layups to make sure if you haven't got a shot that you're gonna get a shot. Like, it's like guys really care, and you know, being like that foxhole thing together. So it's been fun. Like, it was still early in it. Like, we still haven't, you know, figured it out, but it's been fun. Like, the whole process of all of it, still fun.
How many times have you heard the word heat culture since you've
been here? I have heard heat culture. I've heard PJ a few thousand times. I've heard heat culture probably like 100,000.
Already.
You're so heat culture. I went to try to save a ball the other night. Milwaukee game. I go to save this ball, and you know me, like I'd like jump in the crowd. And next morning I get up, I'm already practice, and I see like Twitter like trending heat culture with the picture of like my feet like hanging in it. I almost got hurt, but it's like heat culture. So annoying.
We've been accused of being a Miami Heat podcast during the bubble. We were accused of that all last fall. I'm not gonna say anything about the heat culture. I'm not gonna say anything about it.
Many of our best guests on the show are your teammates. We obviously do a show with Duncan,
right?
But Jimmy comes on every once in a while and just decides to light it up.
To bless us. All right, PJ, we appreciate the time, man. This was awesome.
This was a good awesome, catch up. Man.
Thank you for being open and honest, man. This was great.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, let's get to our convo and the draft with our friend Shay Serrano.
3, 2, 1, liftoff.
All right, let's welcome in friend of the pod, 3-time New York Times best-selling author, Shay Serrano. Shay, what's good, my man?
What up? What is up to you?
Hottest man in publishing right now.
Oh, please. Come on. Get out of here. Get out of here, you two.
Honestly, though, I'm not trying to flatter you, but it has been quite the week for you. First of all, your new book is out, Hip Hop and Other Things.
Mm-hmm.
Which follows movies and other things, which followed basketball and other things. I feel like this is like an endless game that you can play right now. There's so many different ways, blank and other things. You're smart, savvy, funny, witty, all that stuff. You just need to deep dive on any topic, plug and play. It's a plug and play.
It's chicken noodle soup for the soul, but it's that. Or blank for dummies. That's all it is. You plug in one word. It doesn't matter what it is. The template works. There's an audience for whatever thing it is you want to do.
Was there anything you really learned? Because you knew a ton about this topic, obviously, before you started to write this book. Was there anything in your research or just in your thought process of putting it together that you were really surprised by?
There was a bunch of stuff because you don't know the stuff that you need to know until it's time to know it. You know what I'm saying? Like if you want a little cool fun fact, you know, the Public Enemy logo with the sniper rifle and there's a silhouette of a guy in there. The guy that they use for the silhouette is the same one. If you want to see him in person, you watch the LL Cool J I'm Bad video. And there's a part where a guy takes LL Cool J's jacket off for him. It's the same guy. That's the guy who was in the thing. Like you learn little stuff like that. I think my overall like favorite story that I learned, like an actual big thing that came up while I was researching was for the Missy Elliott chapter. And I had no idea. Everybody is familiar with Missy Elliott from like Super Duper Fly Forward, because that's when she announced herself. she had the Rain video where she's in the big leather outfit, the like iconic Missy Elliott outfit. I didn't know the stuff that led up to that. She had been like a songwriter, producer, whatever. She was doing stuff in the background, and she wrote a song for Raven Simone. And when they were filming the video for the song, she had a little part in it, but they didn't tell Missy they were doing the video. They replaced her with like a skinnier woman with lighter skin. And they told her, hey, you just didn't look right. And so she goes from that into doing Super Duper Fly 4 years later, after she has like built her name up. And the very first thing she chooses to show everybody is like an exaggerated version of all of the things that they told her were bad. She's like, here I am. I'm in the center of the screen in this giant inflatable suit. You're looking right at me. And I'm just telling you, she says it 10 times in a row. Me, I'm Super Duper Fly, Super Duper Fly. 10 times she's telling you while showing yourself. And you realize like that was very much like a fuck you move. I made it. Here I am. That kind of stuff. Like when you learn those sorts of things, that was super cool.
Just based on that anecdote, I'm hooked on the book. I'm ready for this.
There you go. Sure. We're in, baby. We're in.
The other amazing thing that has happened that you guys announced is that you have a television show.
Oh yeah.
Is it basically greenlit? It got bought? Like explain it. It's called Primo. Explain the show. What's going on?
Okay, so we'll do the template of the show first. It's about a kid set who lives in San Antonio. He's a high school junior, and he has just found out that he has a chance to become the first person in his family to graduate high school. Like he's sitting down with a guidance counselor and she's explaining to him, you know, I think he can do this. And so it's him. He tells his mom, he lives with his mom, and there's no dad in the picture. The dad is gone, but she has five brothers. So he has five uncles, all of whom have different personalities, different thoughts on life. And they all have an idea of what his future should look like from here going forward. So picture the analogy that we used when we were pitching the show was if you're driving a car and you have five people reaching at the steering wheel, trying to get you to go down a certain street, right? That's what the show is. I'm doing it with Mike Schur, the genius television
legend
guru, The Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec, The Good Place, like every good show that you saw on TV for the last 10, 15 years, that was his show. So it's going to be in that sort of humor. And we start shooting it next year. It got green lit. We're doing season one, which is really exciting. We'll start shooting it next year. And then who knows when you're going to be able to go on Amazon on like their streaming service. And there's going to be a little box that says Primo on there with some Mexicans in it. And you click it and you get to watch the show. It's going to be nuts.
Are you excited for the casting?
I'm super excited. I'm also terrified. I don't, you know, all of this stuff is now new. I had done everything up to this point before. I've never done this part of it. So now we have to cast this thing. We have to hire like set location people and do whatever. Like, I don't know what happens here. I'm swimming with a blindfold on, but that's why you have Mike. He knows all of this stuff.
What was the inspiration for the show? Where did you sort of source this idea from?
Oh, well, you see, I grew up in San Antonio and I have five uncles, all of whom were trying to get me to do the thing that they wanted me to do when I was about to be the first one in my family to graduate high school. So there you go. That's the genius level of brainstorming that we're dealing with here is I was just like, oh.
I was actually hoping you answered it that way. I honestly, no, I mean, that's real, man. And truthfully, Shay, I'm asking you for a promise. Let's assume in 5 years, you're big time now, but let's assume in 5 years, mm-hmm. we're still doing the pod. Will you promise mm-hmm. in 5 years, you'll still come on the pod?
Absolutely.
You're going to be so wait. Fucking
I can't
big
wait.
Time.
I can't wait to be too good for this.
Sorry,
for
no.
This show.
I say 5 years. It's 6 months.
No, it's
the second the show premieres.
He's going to have forgotten about us in 5 years.
The other thing is you got to put at least one of us in this show. We made Adam McKay. Adam McKay came on and he's doing this Lakers show and we made him promise to write JJ a part in the show.
It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't happened. We'll see. We'll see.
But he did say to us that he would.
We're going to get JJ in there some sort of way. Tommy too.
Tommy, I'm glad you brought this up because I try to bring this up every couple times that Shay comes on, but basically as an exchange or as sort of like a penance or like a gift back for talking about my genitalia in basketball and other things. Yeah. I think I deserve.
That's a fair like it's a trade. Show.
That's a fair trade.
That's more a fair trade.
More than fair.
Every time that I write a book or write anything, I just assume nobody is ever going to read it. And I remember when somebody tagged JJ on Twitter and then he responded to it. And I was like, oh, this is before we had ever talked. And I was like, oh shit, he read that thing about his penis in the book. And the book has, JJ, the book has sold like 200,000 copies. So a lot of people read it. A lot of people. The President Obama read it.
Yeah, wasn't it on his end of year favorite books?
Yes, that's probably why. He probably read it and was like, I agree with Jay on this. I'm going to put this on my list.
That sold him.
It's too good. All right, by the way, I just want to say one thing. Dude, all this stuff couldn't happen to a better guy. Congrats on it. You know Tommy and I are always in your corner. You deserve all of it, man. We're so happy for you. I'm happy too.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the draft. The topic which Shay chose, it is so ridiculously open-ended.
Such a good topic.
Is movies where someone makes a terrible mistake.
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Can be interpreted a number of ways.
Let's get into it. All right, let's Shay, talk about it.
You know how this goes. You get Shay, the first pick.
Start it up.
Okay. I'm going to win with my first pick immediately. I never, even when y'all say I lose, I know that I won is what we're dealing with here.
Okay.
I was thinking about it because here's the thing. If we were doing like a basketball related thing, we would all have to defer to JJ Redick.
A lot of caveats already, JJ. He hasn't even made the pick and he's already.
Because JJ is like, he was a professional basketball player for a number of years that his life has revolved around it. We would have to assume JJ knew better than us. If we were doing like something that had to deal with networking, with creating alliances in the shadows, moving around, we would have to defer to Tommy Alter because that's Tommy Alter's life. Every connection that you ever saw had to do with that. If we're talking movie stuff, I'm fucking blowing y'all off the court. I'm the number one New York Times bestselling author with a movie book. The only one in this chat. I win.
All right.
I don't know where this. I don't know where this pick is going.
I don't know. You, and then you
I don't know where
fucking...
this. I don't know where this pick is going. But I'm not confident at this point. Let's go. Let's line it up.
Too much goodwill. I was trying to wipe it away. Okay. Here's my pick. Number one pick. This is a lock. We're talking a horrible, horrible mistake. Casey Affleck in Manchester by the Sea. Have y'all watched this movie?
Oh my god, dude. That's the most depressing pick I've ever
fucking
heard.
That's such a dark pick, dude. Oh my god.
We're getting straight into the deep water. He's drunk at night. He builds a little fire for himself in the fireplace, forgets to put the guard up, goes walking to the corner store to get some beer. One of the logs rolls out, his house catches on fire, and he kills his three children. His three tiny elementary school age children. A terrible, terrible mistake. It's as bad as it gets. That's the worst mistake.
So did you come up with this? Did you come up with this topic just so you could pick the most depressing possible movie scene ever as your first pick?
I don't even know where to go from here, Tommy.
Yes. I said, you know what? I'm gonna zag.
If he's gonna zig, I'm zagging. Whatever. It's a fine pick. Technically, it fits the description of the category. All right. I'm starting off. Carlito turning Benny Blanco down for a drink. And Carlito's way. Ends up with a bullet in the chest. All he had to do was take the drink.
It's maybe better if you have him, if the regret is not killing Benny Blanco in the alleyway. Like, he knew he was supposed to die. He even says it.
But he was trying to turn over a new leaf. He's trying not to be a killer anymore.
He was. Man, what a great pick. What a great pick.
All he had to do was show respect and he would be alive.
Oh my God, John Leguizamo is incredible as
incredible.
Benny Blanco.
Incredible. All right, JJ.
Can someone explain Carlito's Way to me? Because I may have watched it in college, but I can't place the plot of that movie.
I think you should watch it tonight, honestly.
It's really good.
It's an amazing movie.
It's Al Pacino as a Puerto Rican or something. he wants to not be a criminal anymore. But he keeps being pulled back in. The part that Tommy is talking about, he meets the new young drug dealer who's running shit.
The new him, basically. The him before he got out of jail.
And this guy, John Leguizamo as Benny Blanco, He's super aggressive, super assertive, and he just sort of makes Carlito mad. Carlito bonks him in the head with a gun. He goes tumbling down the stairs. Benny Blanco's like, you better kill me, because if you don't, you're fucking dead. And Carlito decides not to kill him. And then the movie ends. You forget about Benny Blanco, and he pops up in the last second in the disguise, and he shoots
Carlito. Right when Carlito's about to leave town.
When he's about to get away with the money and the girl, and they're going to be off on the beach. Nope. Yep. Pop, pop.
Yep. See, this is why this topic is such a weird topic, because the plot you just described, I could think of like 50 movies where something similar to that happens.
Oh, yeah.
Well, right? Seems like you got a lot of options for picks then.
I don't have that many options. I had a little bit of like a brain freeze this afternoon. I'm gonna start off with Titanic and everyone who got on the boat. That was a horrible mistake.
Okay.
That works.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
You guys are not going to be surprised by one of my picks, because I know I'm going to get this pick. I'm going to go with Raiders of the Lost Ark at the very end of the movies when the Nazis open the Ark. That was a fucking horrible mistake. There might not be a worse way to die than the way they died.
Nazis are awful. They're always doing terrible shit every single time.
Like both of those picks.
Yeah.
All right. I think number two, I'm going to go to Europe, go to the country of Italy, and say Dickie inviting Tom Ripley to hang out with him.
Oh, nice.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Nice.
That's a good one.
And not pushing him away.
What a wonderful movie that is. It's so much fun to just watch it over and over again.
That's a good every 6 month movie.
I agree.
Fucking Philip Seymour Hoffman pulling up in the car. Oh, forget about it. Who's had a better entrance?
Classic. By the way, I don't want to spoil anyone's pick, but when you guys mentioned you were going to draft or that I should watch Carlito's Way, I'm definitely watching I Know What You Did Last Summer. Okay. I haven't watched that movie in like 10 years. And when I was Googling poor movie decisions, that's the one that kept coming up.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, two.
Let me get my guy, Sam Jackson, talking cash money shit in front of the opening where the sharks are in Deep Blue Sea, and then immediately getting eaten by the shark. You got too close, Sam. You got too close to the water, and
I never saw Deep Blue Sea. Is it worth seeing?
Oh my
God. It's amazing.
It's incredible. Incredible. It's incredible. That's one of the greatest movie deaths ever. The sharks have escaped. They're smart sharks, by the way, Tommy. Sharks with giant brains, so they know what to do. And Samuel L. Jackson is given the speech of his life. Here's why we're going to get out of here. And then immediately a shark comes out of the water and just bites him in half. It's great. There's my pick. Next one. One more. You know who made a terrible mistake? This is a small mistake that will haunt him for the rest of his life. Nick Dunn in Gone Girl. The mistake is cheating on Amy Dunn. You cheat on Amy Dunn. You find out she's a total psychopath. And it results in a guy getting murdered. His throat slit. And also, she surprises you with a baby that you have with her. And you're just going to have to live your whole life with one eye open.
But are you sure that
to murder you too?
Are you sure that he wasn't into it the whole time? That those two weren't perfect. Those two were not perfect for each other. So is it a mistake?
It can't not be a mistake, Thomas. It can't not be a mistake.
I like it though. It's a good pick. Great movie.
Thank you.
Great book. Great book. Great movie. All right. My third pick, a very topical pick based off of what's going on in the country and the world today and this week. Eduardo not moving to the Bay with Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, good.
Social
one.
Network. Nice. Cost himself a lot of money.
Nice. Nice one.
That's a really good
social
pick.
Network, by the way.
You know what? I'm actually not surprised you made that pick, given that it's your favorite movie of all time.
Shay, can you back me up that Social Network is one of the best movies ever made?
It's the second best movie of the decade that it came out. It only loses to Get Out. Get Out is the only movie better. It's better than There Will Be Blood.
Are you counting it in 2000 to 2010 or 2010 to 2020?
2010 to 2020.
Okay. I wouldn't say it's the second best because Interstellar obviously came out in 2014. But
okay. But I hope you got a pick from there. I hope it's going going to get Matt Damon.
It's coming.
It's coming. Right. I mean, I could save it. I could save it, but I think we should just go with it right now. So when the crew decides to go to Miller's planet, and Cooper tells Bran to get back on the ship and not inspect the wreckage, and she goes mm-hmm. after, and two things happen. Number one, mm-hmm. Doyle dies. Mm-hmm. And number two, the ship floods, which wastes like an hour and a half or whatever it is. In the movie time, it's like 10 minutes, but in real life, it's like an hour and a half.
Right.
And then they get back on the main ship, and Romilly has wasted 22 years of his life.
Oh, man.
Bran's decision had some major ripple effects on that.
What a terrible
major
decision.
Ripple effects. Terrible decision.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
so
God.
So I'm just, I'm going to throw Interstellar there. You guys have seen the movie It, right?
Of course.
Yes.
So you know the yep. opening scene when Georgie hears the voice
and he follows the sailboat. Get away, Georgie.
He follows the sailboat and he looks in and he gets sucked in. I'm going to say the worst decision in that movie is his older brother, Bill, making the sailboat. That was a fucking okay. bad decision.
Wow.
He got his brother killed. He got his brother killed.
You're putting it on Bill. All right.
I like it. I like the specificity.
Yeah.
The weight of his dead younger brother falls right onto Bill's shoulders for making him a sailboat to play with in the rain.
Can I make an observation? This draft has been pretty strong so far.
Yeah.
Generally, maybe I'll tank it in the last two just to mix just to mix it up a little bit. But generally, at this point, especially with this trio, we're by pick number two,
it's falling apart.
With the exception of Shay's downer, Debbie Downer first pick, everything else is like on point.
Oh man, we're all over it.
All right, I actually was worried this was going to go earlier. I'm going Jerry Lundgaard from Fargo. Hiring those morons to kill his wife.
Yeah.
Then everything goes to shit.
All right. That's
good.
That's okay.
That's good.
That's okay.
It's a great movie. It's objectively a great movie, and it's a terrible decision in every way. And the ramifications of what happens when he hires them and all the people. Okay. I would recommend everyone who's not seen that movie watch that movie.
It's a fun movie to watch. Am I up?
Yeah, you got last two. Up. Close it.
I got my last two. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. I'm trying to work this movie in every time I come on the show. Now this is my new thing. Dangerous Minds. The principal, Emilio goes to talk to the principal to tell him, hey, this kid's going to kill me, but he doesn't knock on the door. The principal sends him away. In my school, we knock on doors. And then of course, Emilio ends up getting murdered by the kid who he said was going to murder him. What a horrible decision. What a horrible principal he is.
Wait, you're saying terrible. The bad decision was not knocking on the door, or the bad decision
no,
was
no,
by
no.
the
principal?
No,
the bad decision was the principal not recognizing. Morgan Freeman and Lean on Me would have never let this happen. Never.
Facts.
Never. That was a good principal.
Who's your favorite movie principal, Shay?
Morgan Freeman and Lean on Me, because he just cared so much.
What about
and
the guy?
He just talked so much shit too.
What about the guy in Ferris Bueller?
Oh, no, he's awful. No, he's not the principal. He's the dean of students.
Ferris Bueller? No, he's not. He's the principal.
He's the dean of students.
I'm not going to disagree with Shay on this one.
There's no dean of students in a high school, in a public high school like that.
You would think he would know better, JJ.
No fucking way. I'm going to
look it
up right now.
Look it up.
Shay, can we bet on Cash App?
Bet $2,000.
Ed Rooney, Principal Rooney.
Mm-mm. Watch the movie.
Not
this is
Dean.
A mistake.
Not Dean watch of Students the, Rooney. It's Principal Rooney. Watch, they call him Principal Rooney.
No, watch the movie when he calls the mom. That's what he says. There's a nameplate on his desk that says it too. It's on Netflix right now. Watch it.
All right. So honestly, there's a possibility that we're both right because
FerrisBueller.fandom.com. I feel like that's a site dedicated to Ferris Bueller fans.
Everybody says it's Principal Rooney. I think Ed Rooney
is the dean of students and the main antagonist.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go to the Wikipedia
page. I'm actually with
page.
Shay on this one. I'm with
dean
Shay.
Of
okay.
students.
When I Google Ferris Bueller's Mr. Rooney pleads guilty in sex case on CBS News, it says the actor who played Principal Ed Rooney. Principal
that's
Ed Rooney.
Okay. They put fake stuff on the internet. You can find a
CBS News is fake news now?
No, I'm saying they get stuff wrong is what I'm saying. They get it wrong. You don't go to CBS News to get your movie information. All right,
we've
gone off the rails.
You owe me $2,000. You donated to a nonprofit of your
choice. I'll pay you a cash app. All right, you got your last.
All right, my last pick. We're going to close it out the same way we started, with just something dark and horrible. Here we go. The son in the movie Hereditary taking his younger sister to the party, and then it ends with her having an allergic reaction to the cake she eats and then getting her head knocked off while he tries to drive her home fast and he loses control of the car. A telephone pole knocks this poor girl's head off. There you
honestly,
go.
Honestly, Shay, it's pretty weird that you have two picks with dead kids out of your five.
Because it's as bad as it gets. Oh, he pointed out in the chat the ending of Mist. Oh, that's great. That's a great pick. Have y'all seen The Mist?
Yeah.
But it's not, Chris. Well, you can't
Chris,
provide.
We're not done drafting yet, Chris. You gotta wait until we're done.
Only Shay is done drafting.
I want to change mine. I'm gonna go with the pick of The Mist.
You know what? It's not a bad pick. It's just like, dude. I mean, you're fucking dark. Just like, whatever.
The guy in the Mist would have waited 25
I'm going
seconds.
I'm going the opposite. All right. For my fifth pick.
Okay.
I'm going.
Okay.
Warner dumping Elle Woods in Legally Blonde. It's my fifth pick.
That's massive. True.
I knew you were going to get cute.
Massive mistake. Cute. Cute. Oh, I thrashed this draft.
You had a great fucking draft.
I thrashed this draft. That is
and
a,
then
that
like,
is a, that
no,
is
you had a great draft.
That is a
and
massive
we get to the fourth
mistake.
Round, and it's like, okay, yeah, no, that's a fine pick. And then we get to the fifth round, and it's just
Are you
just
saying
not
that
there.
Dumping Elle Woods before she went on that crazy run that she went on was not a mistake?
I think in all of the other ones, lives were ruined.
I'm like sorry, I didn't find a movie best, where a kid dies.
The best case scenario in all of the other picks was you lost 22 years of your life. That was the best that you could have hoped for with all of the other picks. And here you come with like, oh man.
I mean,
sorry.
Arguably worse than anything.
The rich waspy white guy is still a rich waspy white guy. Like that's, what a bad decision. I fucking unbelievable.
I'm very happy with that value.
I would like to change one of my picks. My new pick is Tommy picking Elle Woods in this thing.
This is every third draft I get picked for this. I think that's a great pick. I will not back down from that.
All right. Stand up. Stand up to it.
Okay. Guys, there's so many like just of great movies that we've just overlooked, and I just want to mention a few of them. I really do. John Hammond's decision to create dinosaurs in Jurassic Park.
I had that one on my list too. Thank
horrible
you for
decision.
It.
Horrible decision.
Terrible.
I would also put basically like there's 12 bad decisions in Prometheus.
Astronaut, don't fucking let the thing get on your face. What are you
doing? Yeah, the decision by Meredith Vickers to run in a straight line as the ship is crashing. Just go to the right or the left.
Go to the side.
It's pretty much easy. And I have to shout this one out. I'm not going to draft it because I actually think I have a chance to win this draft. But the decision by Mikey to call Nikki right after they met in Swingers. Horrible fucking decision.
Yeah, you're
horrible
right.
Horrible decision.
That's a great pick. You could have drafted that. Not everything
needs
to.
That's a winner.
Can I just say, not every bad decision, not everything needs to be death and destruction. Like sometimes the worst decisions are things like that.
Oh,
that
just yeah,
actual
that's,
natural
that's,
decisions.
That's good.
That's a great
you
one.
You should go with that one.
I'm going to leave that one out because I actually like this other one better. But
okay.
Let's say there's an urban legend. That there's this videotape.
Oh.
And if you watch the videotape,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
A girl crawls out of the screen and fucking kills
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you make the decision to watch that videotape. Not a great
hey, throw
decision.
That movie in.
It's called The Ring. It's the plot of The Ring.
Yeah. Hey, put that movie on. You heard the one where you die? Let's watch that. Let's say Candyman.
Everyone in the ring, basically, that decided to watch that movie. Horrible decision.
Naomi Watts. What are we doing here?
Oh, man.
Good pick.
Great.
Solid draft, everybody.
It was a solid
Super
draft.
Strong.
We had 19 great, or 14 great picks. 14 great picks.
That's crazy. You know, my thing is going to be the most popular pick of all of these, of all 15.
Oh, man. Shay, appreciate it, bro. Everybody go get hip hop and other things.
Yes.
And I think I'm still waiting on my copy. I'm not going to buy the book. So just, I'm still waiting on my copy.
I got two sent in the mail, JJ. I'll send you one, my extra. I'm not going to express it. So it'll come maybe in like, you know, 10 to 12.
Just do it regular.
10 to 12 days.
I'm only kidding. Support your boy, Shay. Support your boy, Shay. Thank you for coming on, bro.
All right, y'all. Later.
Later.
If you like The Old Man and the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business. New York Times bestselling author Shea Serrano and Emmy winner Jason Concepcion are back together, this time aiming their high-powered microscope at the NBA in their new podcast, Six Trophies. Jason and Shea break down the league's biggest storylines this All-Star break and all season long by handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities each week. Things like the Denzel Washington in Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or, this is a fun one, the Step Brothers Catalina Wine Mixer trophy, given out to the thing the guys are most excited about for the upcoming week. What's more, Six Trophies is celebrating the All-Star break with a special mid-season episode. The Basketball Oscars will roll out the red carpet for the season's best and worst moments so far. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Six Trophies ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.